Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren, and if it's Monday, it's time for Mountain Money, and we'll try to squeeze in a few more M words along the way. This is Larry Warren, and my guest co-host this week is Alex Butwinski. Everybody in town knows Alex, and Alex has a keen business mind and is a heck of a good skier. We ski a couple times a week, and Alex, welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you, Larry.
Well, our show is going to be fun this morning because our first guest is one of three economists who've written a book. And if that sounds like a snooze right off the bat, it's not. The book is Roadside MBA, Backroad Lessons for Entrepreneurs, Executives, and Small Business Owners. And these are three friends who set out on a series of road trips to see economics in action at the small business level, and lots of good stories from trips on the road.
And then, Larry, we're going to interview Steve Roney, who's the owner of Berkshire Hathaway franchise here in Park City. That was formerly Prudential, and I guess he's going to tell us about their plans for the future and the impacts of that name change.
That storied name.
Storied name, yeah, that should be interesting. And then following that, we're going to talk to Chris Getsky of Volo Property Management, and they're a firm that sounds like a boutique consulting company, which helps vacation rental owners and property managers provide a great experience for their guests.
So we will be back to start Mountain Money after this.
Join University of Utah Healthcare at Redstone for Five for Life Day on Saturday, June 21st. This morning event includes breakfast and makes it convenient for women to get life-saving tests for heart disease, breast, cervical, and skin cancer. Expert health advice, education, and even a chair massage will be provided. Most insurance plans are accepted. Registration is required. Call 658-9249. University of Utah Healthcare is a nonprofit organization.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. We have Scott Schaefer in the studio with us. He is one of three authors of the book Roadside MBA, Backroad Lessons for Entrepreneurs, Executives, and Small Business Owners. And it's sort of John Maynard Keynes meets Jack Kerouac, something of that nature. Scott holds the Kendall Garf Chair in Business Administration at the U of U in the Eccles School of Business. He has a PhD in economics from the Stanford Graduate School of Business. And Scott, welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, this is a fun book, which I kind of joked at the beginning and said it's not what you'd expect from three economists. But this is three economists going on the road. And how did this start? You were playing hooky from a conference or just killing time?
Yeah, we're economists, but we can only take so much economics when we go to a conference.
And
so
even us,
that's right. So the three of us had a habit anytime we'd see each other at a conference, we would rent a car and just get out of town, if even for a few hours. One year we drove from Atlanta to Alabama to have breakfast. Another time we went from D.C. to West Virginia to have dinner. And on this particular trip, we happened to be in Boston. We drove up to Maine, had lunch, and wandered into a shoe store. And the strangest thing happened. We started talking to the sales staff, and the conversation turned into this really fascinating discussion about how the shoe store was managed. So they had this really interesting secret shopper program. The secret shopper ratings fed into how their performance was evaluated and things like that. And we were absolutely fascinated by this. We learned more at that shoe store than we did at the conference that we had skipped out on. And so we wanted to figure out ways to have that experience again, where we could talk to small business people actually operating small businesses all across the country, and see how economic principles are playing out.
So the three of you set upon a kind of a planned several driving circuits of various parts of the country to drop in on businesses at the small business level. and see how they operated. Did you just stumble into them like you stumbled into the shoe store, or did you do a little research to see who you would visit on each trip?
Most trips we started by calling the local Chamber of Commerce, and the best kind of business for us is just a business that's run by somebody who is thoughtful and talkative and passionate about their business. And luckily, it's not hard to find small business owners who are like that. And so the Chamber always did a great job of hooking us up with interesting, talkative, passionate small business people.
Scott, I found the book incredibly interesting. I've probably read 50 books on management. I used to be a management consultant. And this is one of the best ones I've ever read. It's easy to understand. If you're a music fan, people will love the references to various bands and musics.
We're on the road, so we listen on the radio.
That was absolutely amazing. And it starts off with one of your colleagues, Michael Mazzeo, is how you pronounce it, and his idea, his notion that strategy is a function of it depends. Could you tell us a little bit about what that
is? Yeah, well, we're economists, but what we do for a living is we teach business strategy to MBA students. And the philosophy that we have about strategy is that there isn't a set of pat answers. There's no recipe for success in business. What you have to do in business is adapt to the conditions around you. You have to choose the right strategy for the specific business conditions that you're in. And we think that the MBA knowledge is a set of frameworks that allow you to figure that out. And so we, in the book, we describe this. We call it Mazzeo's Law because Mike talked about it so much as we were driving around. But the key point is that the answer to every strategic question is it depends. And the trick is to figure out what it depends on.
And the chapters are all like scaling up and branding and all the things you talk about in business school and learn. But when you went out on the road and talked to small businessmen who had one business that they were very proud of, did they follow the business principles that are taught in school? Did real life mirror academia?
Well, what we found is that the MBA frameworks really do apply. People who are being successful are doing so because they're applying the knowledge that is taught. Now, whether they learn that knowledge in school or not, in most cases for the people we talk to, probably not. But there is a set of principles that if you understand these principles, you can use them to organize your thinking about how the world works. And so in doing interviews like this, people always ask us, you know, did you find people who were doing everything wrong according to the MBA and were still successful? The answer to that was no, right? And people who come across good ideas, they're the ones that line up with what gets taught in top MBA programs.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the book, there's a very eclectic collection of small businesses that you went to as a fire hose company that makes rubber replacement parts for Pintos,
a funeral home.
Cremations. Yes.
Compost. So anyway, that was pretty interesting. But there are a couple – the book is arranged by different principles, a couple of which I found really really probably interesting to most people. And one was delegation. And the importance of delegation. I think there's somewhat of an anecdote about you and your experience with delegation while you were on the road. Perhaps you can tell us a little bit about that.
Well, a lot of this research was conducted while I was associate dean at the School of Business at the University of Utah. And you know, having taught for many years about delegation, I was suddenly put in the position of having to practice it, and it turns out to be very difficult. And so the particular story has to do with
there were chairs
and it, I don't even know how much to go into it. The particular story had to do the particular story had to do with an issue landing on my desk that I wish had not. But one of the really important things if you want to grow your small business is trying to figure out how to get stuff off your desk, right? Trying to figure out how you can hire the right people, give them the right incentives, the right amount of authority to take things off your desk. And that's a really important thing to learn as a business owner.
And another challenge wherever you go on the road is how do you compete as a mom and pop small business in the world of big boxes. And this has been a dilemma for small business across America, probably before Walmart arrived, but certainly the Walmart killing Main Street syndrome. Did you find successful businesses in Walmart towns that were selling the same products, and how were they surviving? Is there a formula for beating Walmart?
Well, the answer to how you beat Walmart is it depends. But a good starting point is to think about what big firms don't do well. Size is a double-edged sword. There are a lot of reasons why being big helps you. It gives you scale economies. It gives you leverage at the bargaining table. You have all kinds of money to spend on marketing, things like that. But there are also things that big firms don't do well. We found a great example of this in Columbus, Indiana. There's a sporting goods store there called Hoosier Sporting Goods. And the owner, Mike Bodart, told us these wonderful stories about how he competes with the big box sporting goods stores. And it turns out that the big box sporting goods stores are not that good at connecting with the local community. He told the story where he pays attention to when the local youth football leagues start. Mike Bodart does. And he makes sure to have all his football gear in the store in advance so that parents can get their kids suited up. Well, every year, about 4 weeks after youth football starts in Columbus, Indiana, the big sporting good retailers start advertising their football stuff, right? And the big guys are using their scale to advertise all across the country their football stuff all at the same time, but it means they're late in Columbus, Indiana. And so by staying more connected to the local community, Mike's able to offer value to his customers that they can't get from the big guys.
That's interesting because when the first Walmart was going to locate in Utah, it was in Tooele. And I went over there as a news reporter for another organization and asked the Main Street businessmen, how are you going to survive? And they all said, we're going to super serve our customers. And then I went back a year or two later, and everyone was out of business except the sporting goods guy. And he said, it's because I concentrate on team sports. I go to the games. I sponsor the games. I have everything they need when they need it. And that's interesting that that's been duplicated elsewhere. Other things that are interesting that you talk about, branding. Now, if you're a big company, or not even a big company, you spend a lot of time on branding and money and thought. What about individual businesses out on the road in Missoula or Indiana or anywhere else you're traveling? Do they put much thought into the sophistication of marketing themselves?
Yeah, the best marketing strategies that we saw came from business people who were thinking really hard about how their advertising was influencing the consumer's purchasing decisions. We think that branding is one of those words that it's confusing when business people talk about it, because the word brand gets used to mean so many different things in so many different contexts. And so the funeral home that you mentioned, some interesting things there. We learned that 3 out of 4 people who shop for funeral home services only visit one funeral home, right? And so what that means if you're in that business is you've got to be the funeral home the customer goes to first, right? You don't even get a chance to make a pitch unless the customer comes to you first most of the time. And so for this company, the way that consumers shop means that brand is all about brand awareness. It's all about the customer having your particular business in mind when they have a need in that area. That's different from what we think about when we talk about Coca-Cola's brand. It's not so much awareness. It's more affinity with the product. Or, you know, if we talk about Nike's brand, we're thinking about people thinking that that's cool and I want to be associated with it. That's not what the funeral home was doing. The funeral home was just thinking, I need to be top of mind in this category when the need arises.
There's also a great section of the book of actually just as a sidebar to that was the funeral home marketing to, I believe their TV marketing was marketing more towards women because they tended to be the ones who took the lead on making plans for the future, so to speak. The other thing I found interesting was setting prices. I think the traditional way of looking at that is, okay, it costs me X, so I need to make a percentage of 10% on top of that, and that's going to be my price. And you found some of that, but you also found some other ideas that had, I thought, some appeal perhaps and some applicability, one being how much will the customer pay? So you can tell folks a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, business people often think about pricing as I need to figure out my cost and I need to tack on some margin. But what we teach students in business school is to think instead about what the customer's willingness to pay is. And willingness to pay is the most that the customer would be willing to pay. It's the price at which the customer would walk away and either not buy the good or buy the good from somebody else. And so in thinking about pricing, if you can get inside the minds of your customer and understand what their willingness to pay is, well, that gives you a big edge towards capturing more value out of the transaction. And so we've talked with a lot of manufacturers who are really good at this. Manufacturers who build custom equipment, right? They have to think hard about not what are my costs, but how valuable is the problem I'm solving for that customer, right? If I'm solving a $100 million problem for my customer, then, boy, you could charge up to $90 million and the customer's still going to be happy because you've just solved a $100 million problem for $90 million. That's great, right? And so thinking about willingness to pay, we saw that in Marietta, Georgia. We saw it in Council Bluffs, Iowa. And we just took another trip last month where we saw that at a mixer company. They make mixing equipment in Victorville, California. It was a lot of fun down there.
Now, one thing that's upset not just the business economy but the world in the last 15, 20 years, internet and social media, even more recently than internet. And for some companies, that's allowed them to be in Smyrna, Georgia, or Enid, Oklahoma, and become a national company. Did you find the internet a hindrance or a positive for many of these small businessmen as you went along the way?
Just
thinking that you can sell your goods anywhere, but so can everybody else in your town.
Yeah. I mean, the internet is a technology that favors scale. So if you think about the market for books, for example, right? Amazon has taken over that market. The small business, small bookstores are hurting. And that's a technology that favors scale. So the small businesses have a tough time competing there. What we did find was some interesting businesses who were working in particular narrow niches in the internet space. We talked to a company in Pensacola, Florida called College Frog, and what they're doing is trying to be sort of the Facebook for the college recruiting of accounting majors market, trying to help accounting firms, not the big four accounting firms, but the smaller accounting firms, find accounting talent all throughout the country by becoming the platform where those two sides of the market can meet together.
And the other thing I thought of is small businesses certainly have difficulties hiring, finding the right people and putting them in the right job. And then I related that also to you have another chapter about incentives and how that would work as well. So
yeah, I think hiring is probably the most difficult challenge that any business person faces. Doing it well is very hard. Even experienced managers make mistakes. But I think understanding the hiring problem can help you make better decisions. We talked to the best example is maybe a company that makes windsocks. These are the bright orange things that you see at an airport that help tell you which direction the wind is blowing. She spends basically no time looking at resumes, right? And the reason for that is that she structured the job so that the only people who are willing to even go through the application process are the people who already think they're good matches for this company. This is a job, sewing these windsocks is a job where pay is tied very closely to performance. And what this means is that if you're not going to be a good windsock seamstress, then you definitely don't want this job because you're not going to make very much money. And so here's a case where she's really solved this screening problem of how do I dig through this pile of 50 resumes by designing a job in such a way that the screening problem goes away.
Now, what about Wall Street and Main Street? You are talking to MBA students, sophisticated young men and women, and they're probably aiming for careers with big companies. Did you really find much on Main Street that Wall Street ought to know and doesn't?
that Wall Street ought to know? I think,
or just big business people who think they're in the driver's seat.
Here's the advice that I'd give to young people about this. If you go to work for a big business, so big businesses have so many people, everybody gets very specialized very quickly, right? And so the one big business job I had in my life working for one summer, I barely looked up from a spreadsheet for 3 months, right? And so I just spent all my time on this very, 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 very narrow problem. It was boring working for a big business. None of these small business people that we talk to are bored. Right, and because they are small, they have to solve marketing problems, operation problems, human resource management problems, strategy problems. They're working with the whole thing, right? And so we think, having gone through this exercise, that if we had to go work for a big business or a small business, that'd be a pretty easy choice because big business to us now looks pretty boring as a place to go to work.
Well, you certainly went to some, as I said earlier, eclectic businesses to come up with this. The dynamics of the trip were also pretty interesting to me. I thought the way in each of you seemed to have definitive roles. I mean, you never seemed to vary from driver to navigator to were you the backseat driver?
I was driving. I was driving mostly. My colleague Paul from Stanford was navigating, and we got lost a lot. And I blame that on Paul.
That was.
Joe, let me interrupt and just say we've had Paul on our air.
Yeah.
As well. And we know he's an entertaining guy because he wrote a book about what was the title? Everything I...
Well, I'm not here to sell his book.
Well...
everything I ever needed to know about economics I learned from internet dating, I think is the title.
Yeah. So we've had Paul on and know him to be a great traveling companion too.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. I mean, Paul and I have been friends for, close to 20 years and same with Mike. Mike would sit in the back and he would try to diffuse the tension between me and Paul as we were getting lost in these little towns. But yeah, we had a lot of fun on these trips.
And one of you seemed, according to the book, chronically late to getting started every morning. And
that was me, but I was on time for this interview, right?
I know.
I was on time.
Yes. But there was a bicycle attached to a Volvo going to Missoula.
Yes, that's right.
Episode.
That's right. That's
fitting
right.
The fit Utah lifestyle.
Yes, yes. We had a lot of fun on these journeys. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, and the result is a fun read. The book, Roadside MBA, Back Road Lessons for Entrepreneurs, Executives, and Small Business Owners. Scott Schaefer from the U of U Eccles School of Business. Thanks for joining us in studio this morning.
I've had a great time. Thanks.
Very good. Well, let's take a quick look at the weather. And if you were listening earlier, it's interesting that although we're going to get to a high of 70 today, we're going to drop into the low 40s tonight with a 40% chance of showers. And Curtis Ray was even talking about a chance of wet snow down to mid-mountain or so by tomorrow night. So a change in the weather is at hand, and we have a chance of showers going all the way through Wednesday. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the real estate, what it's like right now, and the new landscape that is presented with the name change for Prudential Utah into Berkshire Hathaway. We'll be here with Steve Roney after this.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
The Glitterton at Stein Erickson Lodge is a proud supporter of KPCW. The Glitterton restaurant offers regional American cuisine with Chef Zane Holmquist's seasonal menus. Located mid-mountain at Deer Valley Resort, the Glitterton serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily. Sunday brunch with live music. Reservations recommended 645-6455.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Did you know that by shopping locally, you're supporting trail maintenance, our free bus system, and the many wonderful cultural and recreational opportunities in our community? When you shop or dine in Summit County, those dollars stay right here in Summit County. The Park City Chamber Bureau is pleased to support KPCW's locally grown radio show, Mountain Money. Remember, keep it local, keep it PC. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and we now have an old friend of KPCW, Steve Roney, in the studios, and we used to introduce him as owner, partner at Prudential Utah, and we can't say that anymore. Now it's more of a mouthful.
It definitely is.
So what do you say when you answer the phone, other than this is Steve? What does your receptionist say?
Warren Buffett? No, we say Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. That's our official name, but I think in town and everywhere we'll be known as Berkshire Hathaway.
Okay, and is this much of a change? Because didn't Berkshire own Prudential Real Estate anyway?
Oh, it's very confusing. I was on the radio about a week ago and explained this, I think, with Leslie. I'll try it one more time. But
well, the Reader's Digest version.
It's hard to do because it's complicated in terms of ownership. But Prudential Corporate, the ones you think, a big insurance company in Newark, sold their franchise operations to Berkshire Hathaway. We were one of those franchisees, and we had an option to stay Prudential or change to Berkshire Hathaway, and we made the choice to change to Berkshire Hathaway, as did most of the network. There's still a few that have not yet, but frankly, the network's ability to absorb these changes has been pretty trying, so you kind of can't do them all at one time anyway.
And Prudential was a solid brand name. I mean, everybody knows the Rock of Gibraltar. Is there more cachet, though, with going with Berkshire Hathaway? That's been the name of Warren Buffett's holding company, but he hasn't really had it out there as its own brand.
You got it exactly right. The use of Berkshire Hathaway in any of the Berkshire Hathaway-owned companies, the name itself, has first been done with us. So the real estate segment is the first to actually have that great cachet value.
How do your potential or current customers find out that the name has changed? In other words, they were thinking of Prudential as their go-to real estate company. Now you've got a new name change, and there's got to be some transition. I know personally that you did a great job changing your signs in about a day and a half. One in front of my house. but the it seems to me that if you don't have a relationship, if I don't know to call you on your personal number – if I'm coming into town and I've dealt with Prudential, in Newark, say, how would I find you? Or why would I pick Berkshire Hathaway? Are they in the real estate business? What is that about?
Well, our agents are pretty good at getting that word out, number one. We not only have 150 or so here in town, but another 300 or so in the Valley. And they're real good at maintaining communications with their spheres of influence. So that's number one, without question. We do a lot of advertising locally. The Berkshire Hathaway has done a lot of TV advertising over the last few months, advertising Wall Street Journal and other big publications. So the word's really getting out quickly.
I have to say, I haven't seen much of any kind of national marketing. That was going to be my next question is how are they – I guess it works sort of on a franchise agreement or –
Not so much. The national advertising is all franchisees pay in to an ad fund, and that ad fund is used for national advertising. And in real estate advertising, it's typically done in the spring months, and there's a hiatus in national advertising during the summer. And then it's back on again in the fall. So you'll see it if you were watching the NBA playoffs and TNT and others, you would have seen a lot of advertising there. You see it on CNN, on Fox News, on lots of different spots.
Now, of course, Berkshire Hathaway, the legendary Warren Buffett's in charge, but he's famous for delegating. Do you expect to see Warren Buffett or his hand directly in franchise operations of Berkshire Hathaway Utah Properties or nationwide?
I don't expect to see that directly, no. He has a formidable operation.
He's busy.
He's pretty busy, yeah. as much as we'd love to have his touch, we'll get it vicariously through others. He has a great leadership team running this overall franchise operations nationally and globally, and I happen to know them personally. I've worked with them over many, many years, so I'm very confident that we have great leadership.
Let's talk about let's switch over just to Utah real estate market, and you operate statewide, or at least along the Wasatch Front, as well as up here. What's the status of real estate today? Have most property owners recovered fully the value of their property that dropped so precipitously? Are we back to where we were before the whole recession?
You know, in some market areas, some submarkets, the answer to that is yes. As an overall question, the answer is probably not quite yet. Last year and a half or so have been a nice run-up in prices and units and all that. I think we felt pretty good about the direction of the market. It certainly improved. I would say over the last couple of months, we've felt a little bit of a pause. I characterize it as a deep breath. I don't think it's anything to worry about. We have still have inventory shortage up here. For instance, in Park City, our inventory is off 4% same time last year. So inventory continues to be a problem. Our sales in Park City, in terms of units, were up 3%. In terms of average sales price, up 5% for this first 5 months of the year. So improving, maybe reaching some kind of new normal, whatever that might be.
So, but when you look at percentages, they certainly can take you in a direction or lead you to a conclusion that, that may not be complete. So when you look at those numbers that are up in terms of where we are, I think going back to Larry's original question, where we were, at probably what some people would now consider an absurd level of real estate prices, certainly here, are we approaching that level again, or should we be concerned about another real estate bubble? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think we should be concerned about that. For one thing, here in Park City, we have such scarcity of land and of homes in certain locations that I just don't feel that we're going to see another bubble. We have plenty of evidence most recently of a lot of activity in the high end, which had come through really over the course of the last 5 months with our project up at Stein Erickson Residences. That, most people don't know, that went really, really quickly. About 30 of the 54 units are sold, which is striking.
They aren't even out of the ground, some of them, are they?
Only one was built. One was built.
Okay.
It went so well that the developer decided, rather than to build it into stages, to build it all at one time, and that's a pretty good indicator. My sense is that I think people who have been long in financial investments are beginning to return a little bit to real estate as a, maybe a greater part of their portfolio. I think everybody went short on real estate for some time period, and you know everybody was scared of with what was going on. And I think real estate is returning to favor right now. Maybe just as financial instruments are maybe exiting some level of favor because how strong the markets have been.
You know, that high end is good. But those are people who just pay cash. They just move an asset from one, like you say, a security maybe to
right.
To real estate. But for average people, it's still tough, especially to finance a home. And you know, I was talking to a gentleman this weekend who said he'd had 12 offers on a property and they'd all fallen through because of financing, because of just the strict criteria. Are you still having trouble getting people who are your average working couple into homes in Park City?
Yes, I think it's true. I think the banks really tightened up standards, in my opinion, beyond where they should be. I think there needs to be a little loosening of those standards. We're not talking about going back to the times of no doc kind of loans. I don't think anybody wants the return of that.
Yeah.
But with all the regulations that are upon banks today and the secondary mortgage markets, These regulations are frankly, they're hurting the real estate market, and they're hurting in particular the lower and middle income families.
And the other part of the business is commercial real estate. And you know, I think on Main Street we're seeing a return to some of the pre-recession rental numbers. And also there's, I would think, an increase or appreciation in the actual property values of commercial real estate. And you know, I know your firm is not just Park City, but it's the entire – certainly for us, our interest is in the entire western part of the county. So what do you see happening there? And is that flat, or is that taking a breath, or is that about to take off again?
I think that's taking off again. I think for some of the reasons that Larry pointed out relative to lower and middle income housing, we're seeing greater demand for housing that's not, you know, in Park City proper. And I see we're seeing a lot of activity out at the Jordanelle right now. I think the Heber Valley itself is much stronger than it was last year. So we're seeing those areas that we would have considered more outlying areas, I think, becoming more a part of the fabric of our overall real estate community. And I think that's a good thing.
Now, news broke late last week with court filings in the PCMR Talisker Vale dispute that PCMR at this point is inclined, if they lose all their appeals and so on, to take down their lifts. And that word has not gotten out probably to the greater buying public. But are you hearing from potential clients that they're at all reticent about investing in Park City when the future of one resort is so much in doubt?
We're really not hearing that. I think most reasonable minds can't envision that, and I think cooler heads will prevail when they have to prevail. So at this point, I don't see that as an impact. I mean,
that's we've been saying that for a couple of years now.
True,
and still the latest communication through the courts is that they are still so far apart that there is, you know, you got to look at it. It's mid-June. Is one third of the ski property here going to be out of play?
I don't believe so personally, but I'm not in the middle of those court discussions or
and don't want to get in.
I don't want to be anywhere near it at all. So if I were a betting man, I would say I think it'll come together.
You would think that from a – certainly hope that from a business perspective.
Yes.
Well, there's so many things I'd like to say about that controversy that probably are not the – this is not the point. But, again, from a business standpoint, you think it would work. But I think we're at the edge of something that could be very dramatic for all of us.
Indeed. Well, just about out of time here, Steve, but – just wrap up with looking out. Is this still, you know, we talked about the difficulty for affordability and qualifying for loans. Is Park City proper with the fact that there's open space all around us and we have a limited land mass? Is this becoming like Aspen too much? Or is this healthy to have a town within city limits where everything is so expensive?
Well, I don't think we're like Aspen. I mean, I understand the analogy, but I there's a world of difference between here and Aspen. This town has a lot of full-time residents. It has a heart and soul that's different from Aspen. It has deep roots in the state. I just don't see us turning into that kind of place at all, Larry.
But affordable condos are now those that are like $400,000.
Right.
It's kind of crazy inside city limits.
It is. I think we're finding it increasingly. I heard on the interview you had before talking about the ability for people to telecommute and work from other places. We're seeing a lot of that take place now where people are choosing to live here for a reason. And they're able to work somewhere else. So whether it's on the internet or whether they have to get on a plane every couple of weeks, that's just sort of the way it is. So I think we're okay. I think we need to be careful with what we do with the land around us. We don't think we ought to develop it all, of course. But I think having a hand in how it's grown as opposed to you know, just sort of letting it happen is really the key.
Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us, Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. Got that all in the proper order.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here, Larry.
And we will be back to talk about property management in town with Chris Getze of Volo Property Management after this.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Eric Lee, attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo. As a Park City resident for 20 years, I'm proud to support KPCW. Jones Waldo provides legal services to residents of Summit County in many areas. 435-200-0085. JonesWaldo.com.
Park City Realty Group is a proud sponsor of KPCW's Mountain Money. This is Mike Mazzoni, principal broker and owner of Park City Realty Group. 100% locally owned and operated, Park City Realty Group provides boutique real estate services to buyers and sellers in the area. 649-1991 or parkcityrealtygroup.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and now we'll kind of continue the conversation about Park City properties in a different area, and that is the renting of them for people who vacation here. We have Chris Getze here with Volo Property, and you are a consultant to those who have rental properties available.
Correct.
So are you doing the bookings, or are you more pointing out to people how they can better maximize the revenues on their properties?
Exactly. So I go in, whether people are just looking to get into the industry or have an established property that maybe isn't reaching full potential. They might be at a 50 or 60% occupancy and want to increase that. Or those who are just saying, hey, you know, I want to get into the vacation rental business. How do I do this? How do I create a great product? So I'm a consultant. I come in and help them really understand the market and create a brand that speaks to the opportunities in the market that will really drive maximum revenues for the business.
So are you also then handling the management side, or you're just telling folks how to maximize potential,
yep,
but not actually booking reservations?
Correct. I teach them how to create the platform for their business, how to create an exceptional guest experience, because really the experience of the product is what's capturing people and capturing the attention of the travelers. And then I teach them everything about hospitality best practices, what to expect when booking your site, when working with guests, kind of the ongoing management. But I don't myself manage the properties.
You don't want to get the phone call at 1 a.m. Yeah. that the water's cold?
Nope. I manage my own properties and now my parents' properties. But nope, I'm not in the business of managing others. I have actually worked with property managers if they have properties that just aren't performing well, to kind of do a deep dive analysis on how we can improve that. So I do partner with them as well, but most of the time if a client decides that it's not for them, that it's taking too much of their time, I'll help them find a property manager that fits well for them.
Having been a residential property manager, I think you made a good choice. So how do people find you? It sounds like you work one-on-one,
yep,
with each of your clients, and you know, you mentioned a lot of things you do with them. How long does a typical engagement last? I mean, there probably is no typical, but
yeah,
just in a sense of if you're working with, say, Larry managing his vast residential network, how would you how would he find you?
Yeah, most of my work at this point has all been word of mouth referral, which is great. That means I'm doing something right and my clients are succeeding in their business ventures. And now I'm doing things like interviews to help kind of spread the word, because I'd like to grow my business specifically in Park City. A lot of my clientele is international, so I want to bring that locally, so I'm not traveling as much. As far as a time frame when I work with clients, it totally depends on what they need. Some want me to come on while they're searching for a property, so I'll work with the real estate agent to kind of find a product that fits this vision and personality of the owner, but also supports what the market needs, kind of that fine balance, all the way through creating the brand, the name of the house, the logo, an independent website. Not only should people be on VRBO, Airbnb, and those sites, they should create a brand presence with an independent website, creating a house manual, making sure the details of the home really speak to the experience that they're branding through onboarding them to their first guest arrival. I can do the full service thing, or sometimes clients contact me because they need new pictures. Their website content needs to be dialed. Or they just want me to kind of do a one-day analysis of their property and kind of give some feedback of how they might better present their home.
You mentioned VRBO and Airbnb and others. Is that good enough? I mean, that blew up the traditional model of property management when suddenly an owner could reach out to the world themselves in an orderly marketplace.
Yep.
Is that good enough, though?
I think a lot of people up until now have seen great success with listing on those sites. There's a new player, Tripping.com, who's essentially an aggregator to those sites. The problem was so many properties are being listed on these homes that they're not getting top placement. They're on page 50, and a lot of times travelers don't get to page 50, so even if they're paying the premium price, their property isn't being seen. So it's competing then with the plethora of properties that are out there. So now this company, Tripping, is an aggregator. It essentially scrapes all the other sites and pulls them into one place so travelers don't have to look across 10 vacation rental sites, which I think is great. But then there's still that element of competing with just getting your property seen. So that's why I really promote to my clients to create your own website. And Web Chalet is a company that they have all the back-end software, so you don't need to go buy those types of things. Put your website together in a really professional way, and then you can promote it that way with business cards and other avenues in your marketing plan. Above and beyond saying, my property is at vrbo.com/123456789.
Yeah.
You can have a house name that speaks to your brand. You could say xyz.com, and then they know exactly what you're talking about.
So does that actually help you with TripAdvisor or with VRBO or any of those? You didn't say TripAdvisor. You called it something
else. TripAdvisor is another one. Yeah, that's another one.
But VRBO in terms of being, you know, if I'm the 50th one of the two-bedroom, you know, three-bath houses, how am I going to get my property to be more seen more, whichever?
Yep.
Is that part of what you're helping them do?
Yeah. And so a part of creating a brand for your property is knowing exactly who you are and who you're marketing to, and making sure all the verbiage, the photography, everything speaks to those people. So when they do see it, as they're glancing through thousands of property, it sticks out, because you want to stick out from the competition. You know, a lot of what I hear is people wanting a luxury home. Well, luxury does work in Park City, but everybody's doing a luxury home. So how, like, what specific amenities are you going to offer the target group that you're marketing to stand out to them? My current client that I'm working with, she's a single mom. She has a cute little place in Park Meadows, and she's also like an avid outdoors woman. She bikes, she road bikes, she rock climbs, she can crush the slopes, you know, like she's amazing.
Yeah.
And she's a single mom.
Oh, so she's just a typical park hike.
I know, right? And so with her property in Park Meadows, I read every review of every property that's offered, and a lot of them were either rustic or luxurious. But after reading the reviews, there are a lot of families staying there. That's a great area for families. You're next to the Mark, and you're just kind of central to everything, but not in the city where crowds might be keeping you up at night. So kind of what we're doing with her property is we're coining it. It's in the works right now, so I don't have a house name at this point, but we're turning it up as a sportsman's retreat. And with her experience package, she's going to offer free admissions to PC Mark, you know, so everybody in the group can have one entrance there. And since she is a single mother and the need is for families, we're creating the loft in her home into like kind of a toy heaven. So we're going to have like chalkboard paint, Legolands, the classic toys, Candyland, Monopoly, that kind of thing.
Sure.
Classic books, really cute bunk beds, and just have it be like a kid's haven. So as kids are looking through the homes with their parents, it's going to jump out to them.
So it sounds like you do a little bit of interior design work as well.
Sorry. And I'll partner with the applicable people if very specific needs are needing to be met. So,
very fine. Is this like a house that the owner is still living in? Are you working with, is there a niche of renting rooms in
houses? I think in certain cities there definitely is. That's not really
That's
where
not,
I focus okay. my business. I focus on people who have income properties and want to rent out the whole house for a really great experience to their guests.
So this woman is moving out of town or moving
nope,
into the basement?
It's a second home.
It is
so
a second
she
home.
Has currently had a long-term tenant in it, and she wants to change it over to a nightly rental.
Okay. In terms of going back to VRBO, yeah, you're on the 50th page. Is it like SEO? Like, is there a way to maneuver yourself up higher in rankings?
Depending on the site. So with VRBO specifically, you can choose what kind of packages you want. So if you pay for the premium package, you'll get higher
it's
placement.
It's kind of pay to play. You
yep.
can get higher if you want to pay for higher.
Or if you just want to pay for the basic package, then you can kind of do different ads at different times that kind of bump it up or put you in certain banners. So it's definitely the pay-to-play. Airbnb is an algorithm. They don't tell exactly what their algorithm is. It's based on, you know, reviews, completion of your review or of your entire ad, your photography. They have this whole algorithm that they don't really disclose. Tripping.com, for example, they, like I said, they kind of are an aggregator to all the sites. But if you list specifically with them, it's free. They'll put you at the very top. So that's a great way on their site to get bumped up. So it's just knowing where you're marketing, what's most effective, and kind of those tips and tricks of each one to make sure that you're seen and you stand out.
So as the process goes on, you've given me a consultation on how to make my house more appealing to a potential mm-hmm. renter. What about follow-up? Is that a second engagement, or is that part of the normal service that you provide? In other words, okay, Alex, we've done this, this, and this, or I come to you and say,
yep.
you know, we've actually done this, this, and this, and it doesn't seem to be working. You know, what do I do next?
Yep, we'll go back and we'll reassess it because the market's always changing like any business. It's how you adjust to those markets. So I try to create a foundation that they can really build off and then teach them at how to kind of change as needed as their business grows.
Very good. Okay, where do we find you?
Website is Volo, V-O-L-O, Vantage.com. You can reach out there. I have blogs. I try to post helpful information, or you can just send me an email if you want to chat further about your specific project.
Okay, very fine. Well, interesting. We didn't really get into what's your experience to be a consultant in this area?
Yep. Well, my parents, I've been involved in vacation rentals for almost 2 decades with my family, back before it was sexy. You know, they were... In the trenches, making it work. So I've seen plenty of experiences.
Okay, great. Volo Properties?
VoloVantage.com.
VoloVantage.com. Yep. Chris Getzey with VoloVantage.com. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
And we will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. Brett Stimson, mortgage assistant for home purchases. 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
And yeah, welcome back to the final minutes of Mountain Money. And Alex Butwinski, thanks for joining us this morning. And three interesting conversations there.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to be here, Larry. That was a great collection of perspectives on
I like the road tripping with three PhD economists.
Yeah, getting to read, I mentioned it to Scott when we were talking to him, that it just parts of the book are so incredibly funny when you look at the interaction among the three of them and their defined roles and the personalities. Anyone who has been on a road trip, a unisex road trip, I think can totally understand or totally relate to some of the stuff that's in there.
Yeah. So that book was a Roadside MBA, Back Road Lessons for Entrepreneurs, Executives, and Small Business Owners. Scott Schaefer from the Eccles School of Business was our guest. Also want to thank Steve Roney of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, for both for being a sponsor of all public affairs shows on KPCW and also for being a guest this morning. And Chris Getzey with VoloAdvantage.com. Property management consultant. Thanks to all of you. So in addition to thanking Steve and his company, I also want to thank other great sponsors like Mountain West Bank, the Iron Mountain Group, the Park City Chamber, Park City Realty Group, San Francisco Design, and Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough.